be talking like that.
Thank you.
I don't have soft pink, so.
What'd you do this weekend?
I don't.
Raking.
I didn't do anything? No, I didn't know.
No, good.
Any gardening. It's just like I pulled a muscle.
That was a different, different cast of characters.
But I held the new great grandson.
Oh, thank you for your hard work.
7 pounds.
So when I realized afterwards,
all this black hair.
Like a supplement.
Okay, here.
Absolutely, we do.
I don't think I need all this stuff in this packet.
Committee on Environment and Natural Resources will come to order. Quorum is present. Today we are going to be considering as part of our confirmations calendar for this session, the confirmations for the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council. That includes the governor's appointments, which were four, Wayne Enger, James Cox, Scott Rawl, and Robert Schroeder. This is a particularly exciting confirmation hearing because it's the first time we have confirmed appointments to this council. So, gentlemen, if you'd like to, all of you approach the table, and we welcome your statements, your opinions and thoughts as we consider your confirmation. And also pay particular note to your background and experience that you bring to the appointment. So whichever one of you would like to go first, I thought Mr. Schroeder, it looked kind of like you had something written. So maybe
Mr. Chair,
you can
yes.
Start us off.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. for the record, in your packets of materials, you should have resumes for each of us, with the exception of Mr. Rawl, who is being put up right now. Sambal, I think, is working on that right now, and that was my error. Scott sent it to me along to Marianne earlier this week, but I mistakenly didn't have that Scott's at the time, so forgive me for that.
We have that in our packets. We'll wait for Mr. Rawls,
right.
And if you wouldn't mind just moving the microphone a little closer forward to your statement.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm pleased to be with you this afternoon. My name is Bob Schroeder. I'm here as a member, a citizen member of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, appointed by Governor Tim Pawlenty. Let me first say that I'm very grateful to the governor for his confidence in appointing me to this important work. Passage of the constitutional amendment was a remarkable achievement for Minnesota, and I'm honored to be part of the first steps in a 25-year journey. Let me also express my appreciation and congratulations to the chair and members of this committee for your leadership on the constitutional amendment. A year ago, no one knew if the amendment would pass. The voters and members of this committee and the legislature took a risk in putting it on the ballot, but you were right to do so. I also want to thank you for your willingness to create the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council when you passed the authorizing legislation for this amendment. Some may argue that as elected officials, the legislature should be solely responsible for determining how to use the dedicated funds. Those same folks might say that it was unwise to allow citizens into the process. My view is that it took an act of faith and confidence on your part to create the Heritage Council and include citizens in the recommendation process. I hope you will not be disappointed. I'm here today to seek your Senate confirmation for appointment to the council. I've provided the committee with a copy of my resume, and from that I hope you will see that I have a long-standing professional and personal commitment to conservation and public service. Yet 30 years ago, when I completed my first year of graduate study in forestry and was just figuring out the business end of a Biltmore stick, I never imagined that I would be part of something of this magnitude. 5 months ago, 12 individuals, in some cases clear strangers, got together to form the Lasard Council. We were armed with a constitutional mission statement and the law. We were bound by a common interest in conservation. We set on a path with an aggressive schedule to reach our destination by April 1st. Several weeks ago, the council chair, Mike Kilgore, who's with us today, presented to this committee an overview of the council process and recommendations contained in the bill and authored by Senator Saxon. So I'll not go into the depth in reviewing those recommendations again for the committee. I will say that I believe that my colleagues and I on the council have fulfilled our obligation to the legislature. We have delivered to you a set of recommendations that represents good thinking, good science, and a good process founded in goodwill. Let me also say that it's been a great pleasure to work with my colleagues on the council. We were joined together, I said, as strangers with a common interest. We're no longer strangers, and our common interest is stronger. It's been my honor to get to know and appreciate each of them personally, their talents, perspectives, and skills. Going forward, the council is already at work on a next set of recommendations due to this body in January. We remain committed to fulfilling that obligation in a manner that serves and honors the legislature, the governor, and most importantly, the people. As a former boss of mine that happens to work in this building once said, conservation is the opportunity to do permanent good. I hope we can live up to that expectation of permanent good. I want to again thank you for the opportunity before you today, the honor to serve. It's been a great privilege, and I'm happy to answer questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Why don't we just continue with everyone's statements, and then we'll have a free-flowing conversation. We've done this with other nominees in the past. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for inviting me today. My name is Wayne Anger. I'm here at your request as a citizen member of the Lazard Outdoor Heritage Council. As requested, I've already submitted a copy of a resume for your review. And I really do hope that you'll find the information germane to the task bestowed upon the council. Almost 45 years ago, I worked with my father on his farm to develop my very first conservation plan. Back then, it was more of a mind plan than a paper plan, but yet I can say that I'm proud to say that the development of wetlands, forest plantings, windbreaks, shelter belts, and wildlife habitat improvements on that property when I was a youth perpetuated my lifelong interest in conservation as well as hunting and fishing pursuits. It was also ironical that in that same year I had my very first experience with writing a documentary or a commentary in a local newspaper. The commentary dealt with my concern for the loss of wetlands and water pollution that was affecting the local wildlife populations in that particular period. Here, 45 years later, I'm still concerned about wetlands, water, and wildlife. Along the way, I found a career working with people who also have a passion for conservation and wildlife. And now I have a real opportunity to be part of something that can be much bigger than it has been asked to make a difference for the environmental landscape of Minnesota. Minnesota remains a great state with many valuable resources, but we have lost an awful lot. And it's going to take a long time to replace those losses, but it's sure going to be fun trying. We've already had some really enjoyable times trying to put it all back together. I see this whole process as so much more than just the constitutional authorization to do good conservation work. The people of Minnesota have stood up and accepted responsibility for the past and for their future. Citizens that have said we've taken too much, now we're prepared to give something back for future generations to appreciate. I was recently asked in an interview, what will citizens be able to see as a result of the council's recent recommendations? And I thought about it hard, you know, and I thought it would sure be nice to be able to say you're going to see the skies full of ducks and everything is just going to be great. But as I thought about it, I thought, you know, unless you're looking for conservation projects, you probably won't find them, not this first year. That's why it's going to be so important to continue our work for 25 years. When you put a project here and a project there, it's always hard to see and see that there's any significant change unless you're looking for them. Noticing conservation projects across a landscape is like noticing a freshly painted house in a big city. It may be hard to find, but once you find it, it'll definitely stand out. So what happens is it begs for fresh paint on all the other houses alongside of it. I believe that every conservation measure that we put forth will be supported and enhanced by others who also want to do the same thing. I'm confident that every member of the council will work hard to paint a bright future for Minnesota's resources. I would never have thought 45 years ago that having done my first introduction to conservation, I'd be here today requesting confirmation as a member of a council that seeks to restore, enhance, protect the very things that I've been striving for my entire life. I sincerely appreciate the confidence the Governor Pawlenty has shown by granting this appointment. But ma'am, I may also gain your confidence for this committee. And I want to thank you, and also later, if you want to, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. We'll get to questions from the committee after everyone's statements. Mr. Rawl, please introduce yourself for the record.
Good evening. My name is Scott Rawl. I'm from Worthington, Minnesota, which is in Nobles County. I tell people I'm 9 miles from Iowa and about 30 miles from South Dakota. That's about the only way that you can find Worthington for most people. I moved to Minnesota when I was about 15 and started developing a conservation ethic that has just stuck with me ever since. And I don't know if you've gotten a copy of my resume. It came late in this process, but I've spent and have spent pretty much most of my free time not dedicated to my day job, working for a wide variety of conservation organizations, and I come to you today with dirty fingernails because I've been out and have been doing the work, and we've been burning prairies and restoring wetlands and restoring native prairies as well. And so I have a fair amount of experience from an on-the-ground perspective. You know, I have no experience in the Senate confirmation process, but as a citizens member of the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council, I'm hoping I can bring a kind of the grassroots kind of background and experience that can be of value. I certainly have a great amount of respect for the other members that I've gotten to meet on the council, and each comes with their own sets of experiences and expertises. And so it is my goal to, I tell people that I come in contact with all the time, they say if the Lasard Outdoor Heritage Council is successful, and if dedicated funding in Minnesota is successful, how would you measure that? And I respond to them the same way the very first person, as the 100th person asked me the other day, and I said, when you drive across the state of Minnesota from south to north or east to west, it is my contention that over this 25-year period, each year building on the one that came before that you will see more fish and more game and more wildlife, you know, in more native areas. And so I'm hoping that I can add my on-the-ground experience to that and look forward to working with the other members of the council.
Thank you. Mr. Cox, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for having us here today. My name is Jim Cox, and as you already know, I was appointed to the Lasard Council by Governor Pawlenty. I always like to take the opportunity to thank the governor for my appointment any chance I get. It's an honor to be part of this first council, and I hope I can fulfill the governor's expectations as one of his appointees. I'd also like to thank the chair and the members of the committee and their colleagues in the Senate for their efforts in the passage of this amendment. Without your foresight in bringing this revolutionary idea and conservation funding in front of the people of Minnesota, a great opportunity would have been lost. Now that the amendment has passed, I think the people of Minnesota are excited about what we have created. I know as I talk to outdoors people around the state, it seems to be a hot topic of discussion. The people are looking forward to what we can accomplish over the next 25 years. They are confident we can accomplish great things. I think part of this confidence and excitement can be traced to the foresight you showed in the creation of the Lasard Citizen Council. Now that people feel they have an advocate they can relate to and will make sure the money will be spent effectively and as it was intended. After spending the last several months with the gentlemen that are seated here with me today, I also share the people's confidence and excitement. I think every one of the appointees sitting here today with me brings a wealth of knowledge and practical experience in the field of conservation, along with a healthy dose of practicality and common sense. I'd also like to point out that Councilmember Bob Schroeder not only brings a healthy knowledge of forestry and habitat conservation, but for those of us new to the political process here in the legislature, his wealth of knowledge and experience of the nuts and bolts of this process has been extremely valuable to the council. As I sit here today hoping to be confirmed, I look forward with anticipation of the council's next set of recommendations, with hopes that I can contribute in some way to make sure they are as strong as they can possibly be, and they will continue to contribute to Minnesota's outdoor heritage and the success of the amendment for generations to come. Thank you.
Okay, questions for the council members. Senator Olson. Well,
Mr. Chair, I've not being able to stay here long enough to be part of a free-willing discussion, I just want to say how impressed I am with both the variety and the strength of the credentials that you bring to this task. It's an important one, and I think we've already seen the evidence of your work as we've considered the proposal for the first round of recommendations and the thoughtfulness that went into that. So I just want to commend you, and you can count on my vote, even if I'm not present.
Other questions? Senator Scobie.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And to any of you, I guess we heard the the first-year plan of the LaSard Council. Did you go on field trips and look at some of these projects, or was it all done on paper and charts? And what was the process for you as you put these projects together?
We can say that we did not go out on any field tours yet. I think that's something we're planning to do in the future, but most of these were in just written projects. And so it's always a little bit more difficult to read it and not being able to see it. But I know for myself, I was doing some looking in the office the other day, and I've signed about 8,000 CRP contracts over my career. And I've seen lots of wetland restorations, lots of native prairies, lots of trees, and pretty much have a real good feel for what we're doing. And so I feel confident in the ones we did. And I think in the future it's going to be very interesting to go out and take a look at some of the projects we do.
Mr. Inger, what's an example of a bad conservation project? Which ones do we want to be mindful of?
Mr. Chair, I'm not too sure there is a bad conservation project.
Or perhaps one that lacks bang for its buck. How do you rank it? This should go to the bottom of the stack because it fits this criteria.
Once again, I'm not too sure there's any bad ones, and it's when you rank them out, in my eyes, I look at all the environmental things that are possible to have happen in 1 acre of land. And as many things that you can get for that acre is what I want. Some of the questions that come up is whether hunting and fishing is a major criteria. It's not a major criteria, but if it's one more thing that can be added to the good of what's already there and it rises to the top of the heap, those are the things I'm personally most interested in. And I think the council, when we got through looking at the projects, considering that many of them had 11 votes, and in the end, the whole project got 11 votes, tells me that I think we did a pretty good job of picking those out.
Senator Scogan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also curious, as you work through the projects, if you realize that there was a certain discipline or interest or a level of expertise that was missing from the council.
Would like to answer that, Mr. Schroeder?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I'll try to answer a couple of the previous questions and then get to the one that you mentioned there. Let me first of all say, I think I speak for all of us here, that we would not have achieved what we did without the strong support of the chair, Mike Kilgore. Mike is with us today. Mike is a professor of forestry at the University of Minnesota, someone I've gotten to know in his previous assignment to a Council Blue Ribbon Commission that the governor had created a few years ago. And also Bill Becker. Bill is a staff member at the Department of Natural Resources and the acting executive director for the council. And so I just want to be sure to acknowledge them. And I think, frankly, with the leadership of Mr. Kilgore, we were able to take some very aggressive steps in a very short time. Table Senator, you had asked about if we'd had a chance to take field trips, and unfortunately we did not. We were blessed, if you will, with a short timeline. There's nothing like a deadline to get things done, and our deadline of April 1st with a start date of December 1st had us working under a relatively short timeline, and so we didn't have the opportunity to do the field trips that we might otherwise would have liked to have done, but I know we will do in the future. But nevertheless, I think every one of the council members has been there and out in the field a lot over the course of our careers. I also want to be sure to acknowledge Senator Ingebrigtsen, who is here, Senator Anderson, who are also both members of the council, and I think brought a great depth of experience both on the conservation front as well as on the governance and legislative process that really, I think, helped inform the council and its work. To your question, Mr. Chair, is there anything that's a bad conservation project? I think Mr. Enger's got it right. There's really not a bad one. It may not have reached the highest priority. I was frankly very surprised. We were as able under a short timeline to get as many proposals as we did. We had 99 proposals come in for requests of $250 million. We have about $75 million to spend from the dedicated funds that will begin being collected in July. So I think that points to the interest and the demand that is out there and that we're likely to hopefully address in the future. But how we judge those was really first and foremost with the Constitution, to protect, restore, and enhance prairies, wetlands, and forests, or fish, game, and wildlife habitat. That was our constitutional mission statement. That's probably the strongest thing that we have going for us. There's nothing like a mission statement from the people that tells you what direction to take. We have the law, of course, that the legislature passed when the amendment was passed, that helped guide us as well. We also, thanks to Mike's leadership, were able to draw in enormous amount of conservation plan efforts that have been done in Minnesota by very smart people well before us, both in the for-profit and state level, nonprofit areas, to help guide our decision making. There's a statewide duck plan, for example. We were able to adopt and use that, the recommendations from the Department of Natural Resources, the University of Minnesota. So we didn't create a lot of things on our own, but we were able to bring them together, and those help guide our decision making. And I guess, to Senator, you asked the question, it was the one thing that we were lacking. I think it would probably be more time, if we had a little more time, which we now will have for this next round of recommendations, which are due January 15th of 2010. Hopefully we'll be even smarter and better going forward. And I agree with Wayne's point, Mr. Chair, that really looking for those projects that have a robust attributes. If you take, for example, our really the hallmark piece that the council is recommending, which is the work up in outside of Grand Rapids, the 186,000 acres there, that is a good example of kind of the robustness that we can achieve under certain circumstances. So,
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, and to any one of you or all of you, and I don't have, I'm going to ask you a question with two or three facets, and there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious what you've been thinking. When you began your process, had some limited staffing from the Department of Natural Resources, which in the legislation we did so that there'd immediately be staffing for the council. But now you have the opportunity to hire staff yourself, I think, by the time we're done here this legislative session. I'm wondering what thoughts you've given to how many staff people you might be hiring. I'm thinking about executive director to provide leadership for the staff and also give direction under your direction for the council. And I suspect you'll need staff for evaluation of proposals to put them in order so that you can make good and timely decisions. I'm also expecting that you'll want some staff to provide oversight for those projects that you do fund so that you can track as a council, you can track them and get the results that you're anticipating. And also staff that probably will bring technical information to the council. And finally, you're going to need somebody in the field trips you're going to take, and I would encourage you to take field trips because they're very valuable. At least that's been my experience in LCCMR. And I'm curious in all of that how you see staffing the council and how you see moving forward from now into the future as you've had a chance to do your first proposal and to look into the future as to how you're going to operate.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Schroeder.
I'm the chair of the Resource Committee. I can't remember what it's called.
Personnel
Committee. Thanks, the council. We had one meeting and had to cancel it, but I still have the chairmanship, so I'll try and take a stab at the answer here. Right now, just as a backdrop, Senator Fredrickson, you are correct. We have staffing from the Department of Natural Resources. Bill Becker, I mentioned that before. And Bill has been the acting executive director and doing a very, very good job under remarkable circumstances. And I think Bill is here as well, and I want to thank him for that. Going forward, I know we will need leadership at an executive level, executive director type position. And my hope would be that once we've established that position, that executive director working with the council members will help frame up what the rest of the organization might look like. We have funding limits. Which I think are probably a good thing to have. We're limited by law to utilize up to 1% of the proceeds of the dedicated funds. So roughly in the 700,000 plus range for the next fiscal year. And so I don't have a clear plan you know, three positions, two positions, five positions, and specifically what they'll do. But I think leadership is a critical component at that executive director level. And from there, determining what the staffing level will be is an important part. You've described some of those tasks or efforts that will need to take place: administrative support, accountability, attributes and definitions, and accountability measures that are defined, and then mechanisms and systems in place to determine whether or not those goals have been achieved. So having support staff help on those fronts. We'll also be sure to have, I think, a very strong public outreach effort, because there are a lot of folks who are interested in this, a lot of folks that have a great opportunity to utilize the funds. So I don't have a clear picture, but it's certainly on our radar, and maybe my other members here can add something to that too.
Mr. Cox.
Well, I don't know if I have a lot to add to it, but I think it would be nice to have somebody that was in the outstate areas informing people of what we're doing and trying to maybe do a first level of culling some of these projects that are going to come before us, so when they do come before us, we're all on the same page and there's not a lot of wasted time and wasted effort. But again, we understand we've got financial limitations, and I think we're going to have to start with our leadership and expand out as best we can.
Chairman, I just
Senator Frederickson.
It is a fine line you'll walk with that funding staff, because you don't want more staff than you need, because people rightly criticize you that you're staff heavy and using money for staff that could go on the ground for habitat. But on the other hand, you don't want to be afraid to hire needed staff either, because you need good information, timely information, good oversight, tracking what's going on. So I'm looking forward to seeing how you walk that line and decide how much staff you need.
Senator Frederickson, just
Schroeder.
To add to that, as you certainly well know, we have a tremendous conservation community in Minnesota, the nonprofit organizations. And we were really fortunate to take advantage of their volunteer efforts to help us in this first round. We had, in this process that we put in place, we took advantage of the opportunities to have some of the nonprofits lead efforts to help define what our highest priorities are in each of those, each of the regions that we have to deal with: forests, prairies, wetlands, fish and game habitat. And I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to keep doing that, so that, frankly, we can use other people's money and put more money on the ground as part of our thinking as well. So we're open for free contributions as well.
Gentlemen, about 2 years ago, Right about this time, 2 years ago, I was sitting in a conference room in the Majority Leader's office negotiating the language of the constitutional amendment. And all of the language in there, word for word, was very deliberate and negotiated, and there were specific intent with each one. Part of the constitutional provision requires that acquisitions by fee require be open to the taking of game and fish. I remember that discussion very vividly in my mind, sitting at that table, and we made sure that that was in there with a very specific intent in mind. I know what we intended by putting that language in the constitutional provision. I would be interested to hear your thoughts on how what you feel the intent of that language is. And I'd like to hear from all four of you. Mr. Rowe.
I'll go first. I think that the council is very aware and in tune with those requirements in there. We tried hard to balance, conservation on private lands, which may not be open to public hunting, or partaking of game and fish. But I think that the citizens in Minnesota, if there's a choice where we can do conservation on on a piece of private land or conservation on public land that's then open for public access. I think that they are looking for that access, and I think that we tried real hard to balance that desire for open, you know, open to the taking of fish and game. And I know that the dedicated funding actually started years ago, but I mean, there were rallies on the state capitol, you know, there was several duck rallies and several others, and I think a lot of that momentum initially started there, and I think we've done a good job of keeping that intention at the heart of our decision-making processes.
Mr. Chair.
Schroeder.
Thank you. The Constitution says that we are to protect, restore, and enhance prairies, wetlands, and forests for fish, game, and wildlife. In the areas, in the area of acquisition, the key phrase that we use is protection. The council's view is that there are essentially two approaches that you can take for protection. One is fee acquisition, and the other is through easements. Our recommendations do both, and we've weighed the opportunities and cost benefit in both of those circumstances. But I think the on an all things being equal basis, the two projects otherwise being equal in cost and otherwise, I'm going to defer to the side that allows greater access for hunting and fishing. I think that's obviously clearly in the called out in the Constitution. If it wasn't in there, it wouldn't be as important, but it is in there, so I presume it places a higher value on openness for hunting and fishing. And I think, though, just to be clear about it, too, that there are associated risks with acquisition that, as a state, we have to continue to come to terms with, and that's the cost for management that go with them. Management including PILT payments, payment in lieu of taxes, which I know have been of interest to some members of the legislature as well. So I think that that's an important consideration. But I think that the key thing for me is this, is that the Constitution says protect. It doesn't say protect through acquisition or protect through easements. It just simply says protect. So it gives us, I think, the council the opportunity to do either or both. And it's something that we place a high value on, and most importantly, making sure that when we do acquire lands, that it is open for hunting and fishing.
Does the constitutional provision say all things being equal?
Mr. Chair, no.
Choose access regarding acquisitions and fee?
Mr. Chair, no.
Mr. Chairman.
I want to get the answers of everyone, then I'll get to you, Senator.
I have a question about something. I would like to have him clarify something he just said.
Okay.
If that's okay. Mr. Schroeder, I appreciate what you mentioned, but does that also include trapping? I mean, you know, it's another activity, but it does control some of the problems out there.
Mr. Schroeder, do you consider trapping to be the taking of game?
Sure. Mr. Chair and Senator, if it is part of what is allowed under the law, as determined by the Department of Natural Resources, then yes.
It is today.
Senator Parasol, the Constitution does not say the hunting of game. It says the taking of game.
I understand. I know. I was here when we had to fight to keep it in. Mm-hmm. And I carry a lot of water for the trappers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Parasol, I do. I know that.
Because a lot of people don't want people to trap. They think it's bad. Well, what's the difference if something dies, how it dies?
Mr. Chair, Senator Parasol, I certainly understand. Absolutely.
Okay. Who has Mr. Anger?
Mr. Chair, to answer your question, this has been one of those things we struggled with because of the PILT payments on one side. Should we be looking more at private land with easements, or should we be looking at permanent purchases and giving them to the state of Minnesota or using it for federal land? And hunting and fishing, I think, is for myself, was one of the key points that I looked at in looking at all these projects and deciding which ones had the most merit. But on the other hand, the questions came up of whether, how about if it's just fishing and not hunting? In the metro area, it's pretty difficult to have firearms discharge and archery hunting in some of the locations, and so you start to question, too, should we provide benefits, outdoor recreational opportunities in just the form of fishing, even though hunting is available? If it's within metro areas. And also there's questions of whether we should be putting habitat in areas close to large metropolitan areas where you do have traffic problems. We all know that planes can come down. It would be tough to have a goose refuge outside of the metro airport. So I think there's always going to be a question there when it, in every year that we do this, which is the most beneficial, and can we cover everything with every project? And I'm afraid we won't be able to. I hope that we can get as many things done with any project. We can cover most of the bases and have the habitat, have the restoration, have it open for hunting and fishing, but there probably will become some times when it's not going to be able to kill them or get them all with one shot.
Mr. Cox.
Mr. Chair, it's my belief that statement that the lands acquired under fee title are open to the taking of game hunting and fishing was one of the most important parts of the amendment. I think conservation without access would have greatly diminished this amendment. One thing we quickly found out as we started to work through our projects is that most easements, which are on private land, do not include access or are not open to hunting and fishing. One of our largest projects this year, the Forest Legacy Act, was one of the really positive parts of that easement, as it does allow hunting and fishing. But I think that's going to continue to be a problem as we work through projects. We've already felt some resistance to acquisition because of the costs of acquisition and the upkeep, pill payments, all the things other members have said. But really, it's the only thing that we've seen so far that, for the most part, ensures access to hunting and fishing. So it's something we're going to, I'm sure, continue to struggle with throughout the life of the amendment.
What was the, was there, and I'm not, there, in the short amount of time, there was a lot to organize, but what, did you have a ranking system for your process? How did that work? Mr. Cox?
Mr. Chair, what happened was we had all these different groups come in the four categories, forests, prairies and grassland, wetlands, aquatic habitat, and fish and game. They all presented their projects, and then what we did as a council is we all went back and, knowing the amount of money we had to spend, allocated the money as we thought it was best allocated. And then those results were coalesced together to come up with projects that a certain amount of, I think it was seven members of the council had voted for the project. It became in play as a potential project that would be funded.
Mr. Chair, members, if I can just add to what Mr. Cox just said, is that even before we got to the point of reviewing proposals, we established some guidelines and procedures on our own to guide the councils. They were pretty thorough, I think, in articulating what we thought the highest interests were, first and foremost, to be sure that every project was consistent with the Constitution and the law. And frankly, we had some circumstances where proposals came in that didn't meet those criteria. And so we did have guidelines for ourselves. I'm sorry I don't have those with me, but that we really identified before we looked at even our very first proposal. I think we wanted to establish first our principles that would guide our decision making. And that was, I think, a very crucial leadership issue for the chair.
Oh, it's a new language. I have that in there. Still working. Delete every amendment tomorrow, Turbio.
And I just wanted to make a comment on the tours, the council tours. It's just my own observation. Being involved with LCMR and all sorts of projects coming through here, you may not have had a chance to see those projects in person, but your recommendations showed vision nonetheless. Senator Ingebrigtsen, would you like to comment, particularly as a member of the council? Take as much time as you need.
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been nothing short of an honor to serve with these very obvious environmental practitioners. I consider myself a pretty good outdoorsman. I hunt and fish, and actually I'm an expert at both, and I'm really having a hard time, having a hard time catching up with the amount of experience that these folks, all of them, have brought to this outdoor council. It's been tremendous. I mean, these folks, as you can see, according to their resumes, they've been involved in this, and obviously that's why the governor has looked favorably and made these appointments. One thing I would like to one person I'd like to recognize that hasn't been is Greg. Greg Knopf was involved in our meetings a lot, and using his expertise an awful lot. If we all remember over the weeks and as it turns out to be months that we've been doing this. One of the things that Senator Chaudhry just mentioned was the transparency, and there was a lot of discussion, members, about transparency and how we can keep ourselves open, and with the help of Bill Becker putting this stuff online and as best we could with the amount of time we had, we think we had we were nothing short of being very, very transparent, quite frankly, and I know there was some criticism as to not being transparent enough, but I think that's going to even get better as time goes on and when we start making our rural stops out there, if you will. I think that's even going to get even a little bit better. So the one question, and I'd like to follow up after that, just maybe one or two of you, we talked an awful lot about work in progress. And being we hit the road running and didn't have a whole lot of time to set things up, we all did kind of, at the end of the day, agree with one thing, and that was that if we had any issues that come up in the future, we're open and willing to talk about those. I think it's important that at least maybe one or two of you talk about that to the members here about, you know, we're just not all of a sudden everything's carved in steel here. We're open to new ideas. Could one or two of you make a comment on that?
Mr. Enger.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen. I don't think anybody's got a closed mind to anything. We went into this as a group on this council, not knowing each other, not knowing what to expect, but yet somehow, after a couple months, it all came together and made a lot of sense, to the tune of it pretty much everybody agreeing on all the projects. And I think that this will continue to be that way. I've had an opportunity to work with a number of different council members before, and are in different capacities in different organizations. In this one, I was pleasantly surprised. I've had an opportunity to work on the LCCMR before, and I was unpleasantly disheartened by that process once upon a time. And I was extremely happy with the way this one went, and I think that everybody seems to have a very open mind. Everybody is willing to look at the new projects come along and the proposals that will come through us in the future. And I see everybody taking a good hard look at every one of them and will vote their conscience, I think, when it comes through it. And along the way, if anybody's got better ideas of how we should manage the money, the projects, the process, we're very, very much open to hearing them. I know that I would love to hear something from somebody that had a absolute pure way of doing things. This is a process which we had no idea how we were even going to start this a few months ago, and somehow or another it all came together. And I believe this is a process. It's an evolutionary process. It's going to just keep getting better and better and better. And I'm going to be very happy to look back in about another 24 years and look back and say this process was done very well.
Thank you. Just to follow up on that, and then I'll let it go with that. One of the things I think that was quite exciting that I'm very proud to be able to at least say when I'm out in my groups in rural Minnesota is you know, there's always a little reluctancy as to how the dollars are going to be spent in St. Paul, and you know you're always worrying about what other people think you're doing down there and whether you're top heavy with. How administration is set up, and whether you're top heavy with politicians being involved there, and what's unique about this particular group is that the chair, vice chair, and secretary treasurer are citizens. Probably because the rest of us didn't have a whole lot of time to step up, but the bottom line is they are the echelon of the group, and that I think again, a little bit of transparency and public buy-in. And another buy-in project, of course, is the small grants. And the chair of this committee was very familiar with that and how that's going to be played out. We're not quite sure yet, but that's going to be quite exciting. Even the small little groups in the state of Minnesota can get some matching dollars for their projects. And I think we've set aside probably $4 million for that, I believe, and that's still in the process of being worked out. But, Mr. Chair, I've found it extremely, extremely informative, had a great time. I do, looking at one of the summaries here, Wayne Cox is on the front of the name. I was going through this thing, and as I, it's just, I don't know if it's the man thing that you start on the bottom, but I don't notice during resumes you're supposed to start on the bottom and work your way up. But I stopped at the Minnesota Department of Corrections here, and I see you were there 1978 to 1978. And before I asked myself, where was this a working thing? And then I moved up and I said it was employment. So then I felt a lot better about it. So I was just going to check on that, but I did move up two more lines. Did the right thing to do. So I'm clear on that. No, thanks. Well, it's been a great honor, and I feel very fortunate to serve on this committee.
Building upon what one of Senator Engelbertson's comments, I have hunted in East Bethel, Rockford, Dayton, Shakopee, most of the time close to major thoroughfares, even interstates. And those are just the off the top of my head. Those are all in the 7-county metro area. You expand it to the 11-county metro area, I've hunted in far more areas. What is your opinion on the ability of this fund to help protect, preserve, and enhance wildlife habitat in the 7-county metro area? For anyone who can answer.
Mr. Chair, I think we all would like to bring these projects as close to the people that use them as possible, and I think there's a need to have conservation in the 11-county area. One thing we have found is the price of acquisition, the price of doing business in the metro area is much greater than it is outstate. We've been mandated to make our judgments on science, best value for the dollar, so there's some competing interests there. But I think everyone on the council would like to do as much work as possible in the metro area. There are some great opportunities, and I think as we move through the years, a lot of this money will be spent in the metro area. But like I say, it's expensive to do business in the metro area, and that's going to always be a consideration. And there's also the question of habitat next to large populations. There's always some conflicts there that are part of that mix. And so there's a lot of things you have to take into consideration, but I think over the years there will be a lot of this work done in the 7-county metro area.
Mr. Schroeder?
Mr. Chair, if I could just add to that, I think everything's on the table, and I think that's demonstrated by the recommendations that we've already made to the legislature. 77 of 87 counties of the state have recommendations for restoration, protection, and enhancement, including each of the 7 metropolitan counties. I think if you took a look at the funds that we had available to us and divided it up by 87, we'd roughly, on an equal basis, distributed them to the county, 7-county metro area. I think we also, I was informed by the amount of wildlife management areas that there are that exist in the 7 and 11-county metro area, which is certainly is part of the recommendations that we've made to the legislature this round, and I expect we'll do so more in the future. But that opportunity clearly exists. You've experienced it, and we've seen it, and we've funded it, and we'll likely do so in the future.
Okay, other questions? Senator Anderson, we gave some time to Senator Ingebrigtsen as a member of the council to make some comments or ask some questions. Certainly afford the same courtesy to you.
Well, thank you,
Mr. Chair.
As much time as you need. No, I don't need any time. Honestly, it's late, and I'm glad I could make it in before the meeting was over. But I certainly don't need to add anything to what's been said.
Other questions from the members? There is a housekeeping question. A couple of you don't have listed your sources of compensation under your statements of economic interest for public officials. And so that needs to be corrected immediately. Unless you don't have any source of compensation, then you don't need to do that. But if I think most of you have said that you're employed in some way, so we need to see what your source of compensation is as required by the statement of economic interest. And if you could, if all of you could just double check that. And sometimes the online form is slow, and sometimes it doesn't get entered correctly. So you need to go back, and even if you enter it, you need to go back and double check whether it's entered incorrectly or not. The same goes with any real property that you own or other securities. Those are very important things that need to be accurate. So if there is no other discussion.
Mr. Chair?
Yep, Senator Scogin?
Are you going to confirm them individually, or
no,
I would
I
like
think
to speak to one of the members
All right.
if I could. He's from my district.
Feel free.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Wayne Anger serves on this council from the heart of Senate District 10, a district that has 1,200 lakes in Otter Tail County. He's shown great leadership in his work. Personally, I've been in his office, not working with him personally, but his staff is always ready to go. And he has shown a lot of leadership, not only in his office, but in extracurricular activities in and around the Perham area. He understands how farms, prairies, water, and forests come together and can live together. I believe the governor has chosen wisely in selecting Mr. Anger for this commission.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, would you like to make a motion?
I certainly would.
Senator Ingebrigtsen moves that the Environment Committee on Environment and Natural Resources policy recommend the confirmation of the appointment of Jim Cox, James Cox, Scott Rawls, Wayne Anger, and Robert Schroeder to the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council. Is there any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you,
we appreciate your commentary and all of your hard work.
Thank you,
members. Now and in the future. If there isn't any other discussion, there's no more business before the committee. Committee is adjourned.
It was touch and go there. We weren't sure.